Item I'm going to discuss are two separate WACs, Washington Administrative Code 220-415-080 and Washington Administrative Code 220-415-090. These deal with our Black Bear fall and special permit spring seasons. Currently, across the state of Washington, we manage bears in what we call black bear management units, and we have nine of those identified across the state. They're identified primarily through geographic habitat types and structure for populations, dynamics, and density levels. Over the years, we've had a fairly stable statewide bear hunting opportunities as far as number of hunters. You'll see most recently from about 2010, 2012, we've kind of stabilized with a consistent number. We had a few peaks here and there, but generally we have a stable number of individuals choosing to hunt bear throughout the state. We manage our bear populations in, and it's identified in our game management plan under Objective 88, but we manage our bear populations for sustaining, obviously, a viable bear population, but also providing recreational hunting opportunities. And each of those bear management units, we look to manage that unit on an acceptable harvest rate, which is where 35 to approximately 39% of the female or of the harvest are females. And we look for a median age between 5 to 6 years of age. If we start seeing it going above that or below that, then we try to adjust accordingly. And then the median age of males we also look for because we recognize that they obviously travel greater distances, but we still need to keep a viable age class for reproduction. Sorry about that. I just skipped ahead. Okay, so over the years, I mapped here basically what we've seen in the fall and spring harvest for percent female harvest, and you'll see there is a little spike there in last spring, and that's primarily, as best we can tell right now, there's always fluctuation, but as best we can tell right now, it's because of the environmental conditions that we had last year. We actually expected to see a little bit of a spike in 2016, and sure enough, we did. So we'll see what happens when we do the analysis over the next few weeks on the current harvest data and see if we still see a spike or if it's kind of leveling out. So with rule Washington Administrative Code 220-415-090, which is our fall black bear hunting, this basically outlines all the requirements for participating in a recreational fall hunt. We do have an annual bag limit of 2 animals per hunter. And if you look at our fall bear hunts, you'll see where our harvest is relatively stable. We do, again, have some peaks and valleys, which you expect in a population like or a species like bears. But overall, we maintain around a 1,500 harvest take and still have viable populations across the state. The proposed changes to 224-15-090 for fall black bear hunting right now, we are proposing to obviously update the current season dates to reflect the 2018 through 2020. Yes. Yes, sir.
Can I get you to back up one slide?
Absolutely.
And I'm reading, what is it, about 2010?
2010, yes.
Your bear harvest dropped precipitously?
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was close enough. I'm sorry. When was it that all of a sudden that the bear and the mountain lion tags took a dramatic jump?
You know, honestly, sir, I wasn't here at that time, but from what I understood, it was a year after that, and maybe perhaps if there's someone that was here.
When they increased the cost of a bear tag and a lion tag.
I apologize. I can get that answer for you if someone is not.
And I guess this is kind of even goes back to a different, but it used to be, when I went and got my hunting license, you just bought a bear and a lion tag. That was just something you did.
Okay. So I'm getting it from our
what's
AD.
What's he Googling it really
2011.
Quickly?
It was 2011 was
okay.
The last big change.
Or the last license fee increase, as far as the tag structure, if you could be in earlier than that.
So yes.
if I may. So the Jim Brown, regional director. So I was around back when hound hunting was outlawed by initiative.
Yeah.
And I believe it was within a year or two after that is when it made the jump. It made the initial jump from, it was a relatively inexpensive tag to a...
Yeah, it was just a no-brainer. You bought the thing. Whether you're going to, if you just happen to be out hunting deer and elk and saw a bear or a lion, you just did it.
That's my recollection from back in my days in enforcement.
And I guess why I'm posing this is the Walmart theory. I'd lots rather have 10% of Walmart's revenue than 10% of Macy's because you're doing a lot more volume. And that's, I just was curious when I see those numbers dropped if there was some correlation between the two. Because I know... There again, I've been lucky, have an 8'2" mountain lion, have a 20-inch bear. So I'm going, I don't need to waste my money on that if they're going to cost $40 or $50 for the two of them. So just something to think about because we're always trying to generate more license sales. And on some of those type of deals, that we might be better off to drop the price and sell more volume of them.
Thank you. I appreciate the input on that. Any other questions? And just be upfront with you, I'm actually trying my best to look through all of this stuff. I've just taken this position for like a year.
Yeah.
And I'm finding there are a lot of things that are raising questions for me. Why are we managing this way? How are we doing that? What was the premise behind all of this? And so that will be one that I'll look into further. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we'll skip forward to the recommended changes. Proposed changes for 220415090, again, changing the season dates to 2018 to 2020 to cover the current three-year package. Also, we're proposing to remove two GMUs, 410 and 422. And the reason behind removal of those GMUs is that there really isn't any hunting opportunity for hunters. And rather than, you know, for lack of a better term, send them down a rabbit hole and have them out there where their potential is very, very low, if at all, then we'd just as soon remove those from the options and allow perhaps something to eventually move in, and then we can open them up at that point. Any questions on that piece? All right. So the next one is the Washington Administrative Code 220415080, spring black bear season. And I want to emphasize that this is a special permit opportunity. And one of the things that you'll see in the April for the April Commission is I'll bring forward a change in the title of this rule so that it reflects that it's a special permit opportunity, just as we do for deer and elk. This rule outlines requirements related to participating in that special opportunity, and it also, if a hunter is successful during this opportunity, that harvest will apply towards their two bear bag limit for the state. With these spring special permit opportunities, we identify what we call bear hunt areas. And you'll see there's a few of them listed in the Northeast. There's a few in the Puget Sound area, one up in the North Cascades. They're scattered a little bit across the state. We have a couple in the Blue, well, several in the Blue Mountains. We generally average anywhere from 19 to 23 different units, at least over the last 5 years that I could see. And, of course, we're always looking for places where we might want to either add or add bag limits or add units because of different fluctuations. Now, these special permit opportunities, these hunts are designed to help distribute harvest across the state as well as to, on occasion, address commercial timber damage as well. So in the statewide spring bear harvest, you'll see we've had a slightly increasing, but this may seem a little concerning to some when they see that increase, but actually we've been increasing our hunt areas as well. So by doing so, we would, you know, if we increase our hunt areas, then we're likely to increase the number of bears that would be harvested. So I'm actually going to look at this again and see what our percentage is overall, and I think that'll give us a more realistic view of what we're doing as far as the spring bear hunts. So the proposed changes for the spring bear season, now you may recall we did bring the spring bear season to you in August and suggested that we would set the hunt areas and the quotas at that point in time. What I need to do at this point is to propose the change to reflect the 2019 and 2020 seasons. And also we need to modify the language for the Kapawasin hunt area because the land ownership actually has changed. So this, the rationale behind this is obviously to correctly identify the season dates and then correctly identify the locations for the hunters. One of the key things that we are proposing this year, and this is both for the spring special permit hunts and for the fall bear hunts, is we are proposing to implement a bear identification test. Now, the purpose of this test is to minimize incidental take of grizzly bears as a result of mistaken identity, and also to help us build stewardship with our other agencies that are engaged in protecting and conserving and recovering grizzly bear. The intent of the ID test is that it would only be active in areas where the department has identified as critical areas or potential areas for grizzly bear. And this will help us as a state align with all the other western states. So Montana was the first one to put it in place, and it was directly put in place because they had an extremely high harvest of grizzly bears and incidental take. So Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho all implement a test. Idaho's test is optional at this point, although they are revisiting it as a mandatory test because they've had a couple of grizzly bears harvested over the last few years. So this would align us with the other western states. The intent is that we would be able to provide photographic evidence rather than just a quick fax card. It would be photographic clues for hunters to help them understand the differences between grizzly bears and black bears when they're out in the field. The test would be required again for the GMUs identified by the department. We would list them in the hunting pamphlet. This is not meant to be anything to prevent a hunter. You have a question, sir? I'm sorry.
Oh. I might be getting ahead of you a little bit. I noticed that it was an annual requirement.
Yes, so we'd like to have this as an annual requirement, and that is one of the changes that you'll see in the changes between this commission meeting and the next commission meeting is proposing it as an annual requirement just to keep people up on their skills. We may have better photographs that we can supply during the process of this. But again, what I was about to say is that we're not trying to penalize hunters. We want them to pass so they can take this test as often and as many times as they need to until they reach an 80% score rate. And that's fairly common with all the other states. They do that same process.
I just kind of wondered why it would be required annually. Once you pass the test and can identify the bear, why you'd have to do it every year. It's an added burden and maybe a disincentive to get the license.
Well, so I know that disincentive is a big concern for us as well. Excuse me. And when I spoke with Montana about how they rolled this out, they actually felt like they had more involvement with the hunters and support after they actually took the test the first time and were like, oh, this is really not that big of an inconvenience. And they actually saw some of their licensing sales increase for bear hunting, particularly with outside non-resident hunters. They decided to come into those areas and hunt. I don't know if it was a direct correlation that people were fearful that they might kill a grizzly bear unknowingly or what, but anyway, they did see an increase. So I'm not sure how it's going to impact us. It's certainly something we need to be aware of and we'll pay attention to, and we're working with our licensing division to make sure we're able to monitor that and to do a check. Is this an effective approach? Is it not? Are there ways to improve? Is this something maybe we don't want to do in the future because it is impacting us?
I'm sure, Stephanie, you thought through.
Well, I've tried. I'm sure there's a few things I've probably missed. So I'm open for ideas and discussion.
All right.
The other thing is we are going to honor certificates from those other states. Mm-hmm. So if you have a hunter from Idaho and he wants to come into Washington, he or she wants to come into Washington, we'll honor that certificate as well. Right now, we're looking at having it an online testing, so it'll be tied to their wild ID. So when they go in, they can just take the test right then and there. We're also looking at having opportunities to take the test at a regional office if someone doesn't have access directly from their home. Yeah, okay. So with that, we know we have the spring blackberry seasons, and we are looking at if we go forward with the ID test, then we are proposing that the following GMUs, which border the Canadian border, GMU 101, 105, 108, 111, 117, all require the mandatory test for the next spring bear season, which would be 2019. Additionally, we are looking at the North Skagit, which is our GMU 418, and we're looking at that as another place where we would require that test. And again, it's because it is directly bordering Canada, where the likelihood of grizzly bears coming in is higher. And then you'll note here, you can see the change that we made regarding the land ownership in Kapawisen. It changed ownership, so we've made that change, and we're proposing that change be set into the rule and accepted into the rule. So again, proposed changes for 220-415-080 and 220-415-090, which are the fall black bear season and the spring special permit hunts. Modifying the language to clarify the reporting requirements has been modified because they didn't align with each other. They had different language, so we're trying to modify the language so that both read the same way, the requirements are the same, everyone understands if you're hunting bear, these are the things that are required of you, whether it's in the spring permit hunt or if it's in the fall. We're also modifying the penalties. This is something that we did get some feedback on from the public through the survey. We had it originally listed as a infraction, which was in error. So we've corrected that, and if you fail to report, it would be a misdemeanor. So we're modifying that language again in these rules. Again, this should reduce some of the confusion and accurately address any violations and the penalties associated with those violations. I did want to talk a little bit about public comment on this. In the fall bear, we received 49 comments through the survey, and most everyone suggested, they were supportive of it. We did have... I should say, it was equal support versus equal opposition. Most of the oppositions were opposed to the bear ID, stating it as an additional hurdle, and also stating their concern about having to carry this on their person. We're working with licensing right now about the opportunity for them to be able to just have it on their smartphone. If it's linked to their wild ID, they can just pull it up on their smartphone, and if they're questioned, they can show that to the party that's questioning them. The interesting thing about this is the bear ID test, when we did the public meetings, we had almost unanimous support. I won't say unanimous support, but there was quite a bit of support. And then when we do the surveys, online surveys, it came out 50-50. We did have a lot of ideas. People were submitting ideas about earlier start dates and increasing bag limits and separating bag limits from the spring bear hunt. And those are things that we'll, address over time as we start looking at the bear hunts as a whole. On the spring bear hunt, we received 77 comments, 18 supported, 41 individuals expressed opposition to it. Most of the opposition in this was literally expanding the seasons, increasing the tags, and there was this opposition to the infraction piece of the reporting requirement, which we corrected. It's actually a misdemeanor, and the public spoke clearly on that, and they were accurate on that piece. But again, the greater majority of the people who commented on the spring hunt really just wanted increased opportunities. So I've heard that. We'll be looking at that stuff, and we'll see if there are, areas where we need to distribute harvest more, or if maybe there's some timber damage areas that we need to address. And then with that, I'm glad to take any questions or comments.
Barbara? I have two quick questions.
Yes.
On the ID test, do we have history on how many grizzly bears have accidentally been killed in the state?
So in this state, we haven't had any mortalities, at least in the last 10 years. More recently, though, we've had a lot more sightings. We've had almost a dozen different sightings. And from what I understand, and Anne Marie, who's in maybe here, she might be able to comment more. But last I knew, at least six of them were confirmed sightings in, okay, in our northeastern areas.
Second quick question.
Yes.
You said that the average was about 1,500 successful hunts per year. Is that cumulative from spring and fall? And then do we know about how many black bears live in the state? I'm looking for out of how many.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Good question. So we have used a standing estimate, population estimate of about 35,000 to 40,000 bears statewide. And then the 1,500 does not necessarily include the spring bear hunts. On the spring special permit hunts, we've averaged anywhere from about 90 to 120 bears taken successfully during those time frames. And again, that fluctuates with the number of hunt areas that we offer and the number of permits we've given. On average, we draw about 800 hunters for a special permit, and we've had generally about 20 units open in most years.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kind of a similar question, I guess. It's difficult for me to go through this presentation and find out if you have expanded the seasons or reduced them or they're about the same.
Okay.
But your goal at the beginning was to provide opportunity while maintaining sustainable bear populations. Mm-hmm. So when people ask you, how comfortable are you that you're sustaining the bear populations, but they're going up and you should have more tags, or they're going down and you should have fewer tags? If the season is about the same as it's been, I'll start with asking that. Is it true that the season that you're proposing here is about the same as it's been, and how confident are you that it shouldn't be smaller or larger?
Yes, so I apologize. So, yes, we're asking for the seasons to stay status quo during the fall seasons, and only the minor adjustments related to the potential of the bear test. And then for the spring season, we already approved those for this year, and we're asking them to stay status quo at this point with the adjustment of the potential bear test and the change in the land ownership. Now, in the spring season, I do want to mention that when we met last August, the reason we brought it to you in August was so that our biologists, our staff, would have the opportunity to assess what happened the season before, and then if we needed to make changes, we would bring them forward. So our staff will be looking at the end of this spring season, whether or not any adjustments need to occur, and you may see me again in August proposing a change to those seasons. And at this point, the general bear season for fall, we're leaving status quo. But to be honest with you and upfront with you, I am looking at our harvest over the years. Where has it occurred? What have we seen on the landscape? Do we have more information? Because we're just wrapping up a density study in some of the study areas that would affect or may affect our harvest. And so we'll be reviewing that. And in fact, I just had a conversation with a gentleman here about, particularly in the Northeast, right now we have a one bear bag limit. And so my question coming into this position is, why is it different there? So I need to find out what the history was, why we set those limits, and are we still needing that or not? Is there a change that needs to occur? And quite honestly, to come to this commission meeting and propose a change at this point, I think I would be falling short being a good biologist and steward of the resources. So at this point, I'm proposing we leave them status quo, and as we work through this, if we decide there needs to be a change, you may see me again proposing those changes for those positions, because I do think there's likely density issues in different areas, and we may be able to address those. We may not. It depends on the information we have. So does that help you, sir?
Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
So as Steph did mention this, and it probably didn't resonate, but the way we manage bears is by the percent of female harvest, the percent of female in the harvest. And right now we're at the top end of that. And she said we were going to look at the data and see if it dips back down. So we are comfortable that with the current harvest level that we're not over-harvesting, given that our criteria is percents of females in the harvest. That's what's in our plan currently. Does that make sense? That's how we assess whether we're over-harvesting or not, is by the percent of females in the harvest. That's our best way to assess if harvest is excessive or not, because we don't have a good population estimate of bears in the state.
Okay, I'll catch up with you later. The percent female could be the same if there's 100 or there's 100,000, and the percent female could be the same. But yep, let me catch up with you later on that detail.
Sure.
One question about your possible changes.
Yes, sir.
Are you talking about any changes between now and April or beyond April?
So the only changes I am proposing between now and April, what I haven't presented here in your notebooks, is the inclusion of the word annual into the rule itself. It's in the presentation. And other than that, it's the changes that I've outlined.
Yeah. Thanks, Deb. In the summary sheet, it said that you were going to add language to include biological samples beyond teeth. And did I miss that in the rule?
It is in there.
There are samples added?
Yes. Okay. It says biological samples to encompass things such as tissue or hair samples that we use for genetics.
Okay.
Good. That's good. Thank you. I'm happy to discuss any of this with you all afterward as well.
So are you at the end of that one then?
I was. Questions?
Okay. Then we have three public testimony. I want to provide. So Chris Hedrick, Jim Sutton, please.
So again, I'm very thankful to be able to come in front of you for my 3 minutes here. What I see on our ranch is in Northeast Washington is in the last 5 years a pretty dramatic increase in generally in predators, but basically bears being one of them. And I know that from our ranch, we have like three places where we have salt for cattle and everything else. And so, as a general rule, between moose, elk, and deer, for every three moose, elk, and deer that come through to get salt, we have on camera, we'll have one predator, whether it be a cat, bear, or whatever else. And so there is a large population. Now, the one thing about spring bear hunts is, I know in our unit you increase the numbers, but I don't agree with what she said in the identification part of that, because it is easier from a hunter's standpoint to identify a bear in the springtime, whether it's a male or female, because the females, the cubs are small and they're always with the sows. If you're looking to reduce the amount of actual bear populations and targeting males, you're better off to increase your spring harvest, because the identification would be better than it would be in the fall. And I'm saying that as far as grizzly bears, you're going to have a harder time at identifying a grizzly bear with a rifle season in the fall when there's more brush, there's more everything. The timing's a lot faster as far as trying to harvest an animal. In the spring, they're in a lot more open areas. They're coming out, they're feeding because they're fresh out of their den. They spend a lot of time in the open. Your identification is going to be a lot easier to identify whether that's a grizzly or a black bear in the springtime than it is in the fall. So if you're going to make it mandatory for the spring bear hunters to have an identify that, if they buy a tag, I believe that fall is just as important, because I think you run the chance of a bear getting killed with a rifle a lot greater than you do with a rifle in the fall than you do a grizzly bear than you do in the spring. that would be an observation as a hunter, because in the springtime, when you decide that you're going to take that bear, you've had normally a fairly long period of time to determine, make sure she doesn't have cubs, because the cubs will be close. In the fall, that's not necessarily true. You harvest a sow in the fall that's got cubs with her, the mortality on those cubs going through and hibernating over the winter are probably about the same mortality as if you shot in the spring.
Good timing.
Thank you.
And Don DeShiel, one more time, please. And Jim?
Again, Commissioners, Chair, thank you for having me. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council. And at the last meeting in Olympia, the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council introduced a plan to help mitigate the issues in District 1 regarding the ungulate population hitting ground zero, or as we call it, the point of no return. We are taking a proactive stance rather than a reactive one. After offering our initial proposal, we had a couple meetings with the Region 1 staff and in turn have had meetings with the WDFW Wildlife Program staff in Olympia. Actually, Region 1 had that meeting with them. Collectively, our understanding is that the Wildlife Program has agreed to review the black bear and cougar seasons for changes that could be made in the 2019 or 2020 season. We confirmed this at a recent meeting with Steve Prezangra, the Region 1 director. In light of this, we have now amended our proposal, which you guys have a copy of, our last one, and now you have a copy of the new one with the amendment in it. We believe that with the tools at your fingertips, action based upon our updated proposal would greatly improve the way WDFW is viewed in District 1 and would be beneficial for all user groups. This is our revised proposal. So, for black bears in District 1, we would like to see a moderate increase in the 2018 spring black bear tags, which we know that the draw was yesterday, but and I don't know if you guys can go ahead and do anything between now and April to up those tags. But we'd like to see the black bear tags go to 790 permits, and in 2019 move to an open spring bear black bear season, except for in Game Management Unit 113, which we already know has grizzly bears. And as for the cougars, we believe that the 12 to 16% harvest guideline for District 1 is a little too conservative, and that we would like to see a moderate increase in the upper guideline to about 24% for this year and upcoming seasons as described. We're looking forward to working with the program on a review of the cougar season structure to see if more cats can be harvested in 2019 and 2020 in District 1. Please keep in mind that a small increase to the percent of cougar to be taken at the upper end of the guideline in District 1 will only result in a handful of cats. And by that I mean it's going to go from about 37 to 56. All of these numbers can be revised annually if necessary. And again, the benefits of this proposal is to produce a more positive outlook of WDFW in Region 1, a more stable ungulate population for predator consumption and hunting, reduced predator conflicts in District 1, and more revenue for private business in District 1 from hunting, and more revenue for the department. Thank you for allowing us, the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, to speak on this issue.
Thanks, Jim.
Certainly.
Thanks for letting me be here again. So I'm coming at from a little different angle. Chris is kind of our resident, knows a lot about hunting and animals up there. I've always asked for a get rid of the permit system for spring bear, especially, you know, in our area. And Stephanie did talk about the one bear bag limit. But what we're facing in the northern part of the counties up there is that we're getting valuable property destroyed by bear. I don't know if any of you have sold a truckload of cedar logs lately, but if you have, you'd be able to go to Europe. And there's quite a bit of bear damage there, so I think the landowners in that, which are lots of private ground up there that has cedar on it, that they're logging. One of my acquaintances said he thought he'd logged some last year and probably figured he had trees that were ruined by bear, probably three or four truckloads of them. You know, and some of that's regen, some of that is, could be harvestable, probably not now, but now that they're dead and this big, they're never going to grow up. And I think those landowners would probably recruit bear hunters in the spring. What that harvest level would end up being, I don't know, but I think any time they get their bear numbers figured out, they will see there's plenty of bear. Those guys that are up in that country logging and things see plenty of bear, but mostly they see the damage. So I would suggest at least looking in the future to opening up that spring bear in our area. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. And that
on those cedars?
Yeah, they'll peel them off. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's probably not horrible if they do a little, but a lot of times they'll girdle them and then they're just done. But cedar last summer was worth up to, I think it got up to $1,600 a thousand. You know, when you put 5,000 foot of logs on a truck and it costs you about $300 to get it logged and hauled, there's still $6,500, $7,000 a truckload. And, you know, the bear don't kill them all, but they're getting enough damage. Arden Tree Farms, Hancock. I can think of several other, you know, private landowners that aren't DNR or the Forest Service. So it's kind of a damage thing.